Welcome back to Your Political Playlist. I'm your host, Emily Tisch Sussman. After much anticipation, President Biden released his American Jobs Plan, which proposes an investment of $2 trillion in infrastructure, jobs, the care economy, climate change, childcare, and more. To help us dive deeper into this massive infrastructure plan, I'm sitting down with Tanya Snyder, reporter at Politico and transportation aficionado. She'll help us dissect what kind of impact the plan will have on families and what the plan is missing. Welcome, Tanya. So welcome, Tanya Snyder from Politico, covering infrastructure. Now, I don't want to mislead you. I don't want to lie to you here. We have not traditionally gotten the most engagement when we do infrastructure episodes.
What?
I know. I keep doing them. Like, honestly, obviously I care and I want to keep doing it. We don't always get the most engagement on them. So help us understand, Tanya, why should people care about infrastructure?
Well, first of all, it matters when we, you know, think about getting to work, when we go to work again someday. It matters when we think about how we get around. But the way that the Biden administration and Congress right now are thinking about it, and Pete Buttigieg is thinking about it, is also very much a way to address climate change and equity issues. And they're putting those really front and center. You know, driving everywhere is a climate disaster and not good for our cities, but it's a luxury also that wealthy people have that low-income people don't have. And when low-income people don't have a way to access jobs, to make sure that they can get to those jobs on time, to make sure that they can access opportunities, you know, the finding the right school for their kid or extracurricular activities, things like that, that cuts them off from opportunities. And so it is very much an equity issue. And of course, you know, if driving everywhere is the only way to make sure that we get places on time, reliably, that's just a completely unsustainable way for us to get around for the planet.
And so we're talking about infrastructure right now. People may have been hearing it percolating up because it's Biden's big push, right? Like the first big push was, as he said, shots in arms, checks in, I think, inboxes and in direct deposits. I'm not sure exactly how he had phrased it, but that was the COVID relief package. And now he's talking about his big push for legislation. The big thing he wants is a big sweeping infrastructure package. I saw someone in our comments below here said, come on, infrastructure sexy. We obviously agree. That's why we are having this conversation. But so the players that you had mentioned, both Biden, Congress, and Pete Buttigieg, because he's now the Secretary of Transportation, can you help us explain what we're hearing in the news and how we should understand it?
Well, there's a lot of politics behind this. And first of all, you know, I'm framing it as an issue of climate and equity. That's the way this administration is framing it as well. But infrastructure is also, you know, filling potholes and making the trains run on time. And presidents have been trying to do that and tackle that for a long time. Obama put forth 5 or 6 infrastructure plans. Trump obviously campaigned on it, never got it to happen. Congress has been trying to increase infrastructure investment for a long time. This is also sort of a political issue that has just not gone away, and no one has found success with it. So there's that aspect of it as well. And people often think of infrastructure as primarily a jobs issue. And right now that is very much front and center as we're trying to rebuild the economy after COVID. So what we're seeing right now politically is the Democrats putting forward a pretty ambitious, large, wide, kind of broad scale infrastructure plan where they are defining a lot of things as infrastructure that have not traditionally been under the umbrella of infrastructure. And they're planning to pay for it by rolling back Republicans' favorite thing, which is some of their tax cuts from 2017. And they're saying they want this to be bipartisan, and they're having a hard time, as I don't think anyone is surprised.
So that is the big question, right? It's like, what is infrastructure? One of the things that we've talked about in our most recent podcast episodes and conversations that ended up becoming kind of at the center of this is is caregiving infrastructure and is childcare infrastructure? I mean, I think it is. And clearly, I think anybody who's listening to these episodes, as we just had a whole conversation about how we actually can't bring the economy back until we have like a really strong childcare infrastructure. How is that conversation breaking down in this bill?
Well, I think that it's breaking down in a really partisan way, where Democrats are trying to say, so they're trying to basically say that everything that they want to move in this Congress is infrastructure, because that's the thing that's moving. And, you know, whether or not that is a useful frame, I think, is debatable. I mean, I think that we can say that there are multiple useful and important things and policies that we need to kind of dig out from the Trump years. And one of them is caregiving and one of them is infrastructure. And they are two different things. There is an infrastructure of caregiving, but it is not what people usually mean when they're talking about infrastructure. Republicans are now saying that you know, water pipes and broadband are also not what they mean when they talk about infrastructure. And that's, I think, a little bit more debatable. But whether or not caregiving is infrastructure, it's certainly essential. And there is a caregiving element to this bill. It's actually the single largest component of this bill. But there's also kind of a caregiving American Families Plan that's going to be coming down the road a little bit that's going to have more of that element.
So can you explain this partisan breakdown to us generally of the pieces of the bill? I mean, it feels like roads and water pipes would be something that everyone can get behind. And if all Congresses and all presidents have tried to do it, how have they not succeeded? And why will they succeed this time?
Well, I mean, why will they succeed this time? I mean, right now you have partisan unity on the House, Senate, and the White House, and not just that they're all from the same party, but they all have a pretty well-aligned idea of what infrastructure is and what they're trying to achieve with this package. And the fact that part of what they're trying to achieve with this package is to roll back some of the tax changes that were made in 2017 that they objected to then and have been trying to undo since then.
And those are primarily the corporate taxes, right? Going
yes.
from going
They're to- not touching individual taxes at this point.
So Democrats are looking to pay for infrastructure changes by reinstituting corporate tax rates to what they had been to before, what they had been before the Trump.
Not even what they had been before Trump, but raising them from 21% to 28%. So there is a lot of unity among the leaders in Congress now, like I said, the White House on down. So I think that there is a reason to be confident that something can get done. They have a way to pay for it. It's not a way that Republicans want, but they have a political mechanism to get it done, which is reconciliation. Democrats keep saying we want Republicans to come along with us, but they aren't necessarily changing their plan to bring Republicans along. So I think that we are going to see some movement now that we haven't seen for the last many years that we've had presidents and members of Congress talking about this.
So the past couple of years, it felt like Republicans' position was just basically against anything that Democrats were for. It certainly felt that way when I was working at the end of the Obama administration. What are Republicans saying they proactively want in this bill that they would actually come to the table on?
Right. Republicans, you will hear, if you're covering infrastructure as closely as I am, you will hear people all the time say things like, there are no Democratic roads and Republican roads. There's no such thing as a Democratic bridge or a Republican bridge. But there are definitely Democratic ways of paying for these things and Republican ways of paying for these things. And there are definitely also different priorities. I mean, are Republicans as interested in, you know, transit, which they see as primarily serving urban areas or being more important to urban constituents? Those aren't their constituents. Like, they care about it less. There are a lot of things that Democrats are trying to do to bring more accountability into the way that we do infrastructure so that, for example, we don't build more roads without taking care of the ones that we have. Maintenance and repair has been something that has been that we've been backlogged on for a long time. And that, accountability measures like that are controversial as well. State DOTs want flexibility and they say they'll take care of it. Democrats in Congress want to put a lot of rules on the money that we send. So there are definitely lots of differences in terms of how Democrats and Republicans want to tackle this.
We've had the FCC acting chair, Jessica Rosenworcel, on pre and post COVID. And she talks a lot about broadband and the gap and the broadband gap and how the difference between, you know, when we think about increasing broadband, we kind of traditionally think about like, oh, those faraway rural places, like let's hook them up. And yes, that is true. But there's also urban problems with broadband, especially when it comes to costs that people just, even though it's there, it can't access it. We have a couple of questions here that I want to get into in the chat that are interesting. So first, can you explain the difference between the infrastructure bill and the transportation reauthorization slated for the fall? And also, are the return of earmarks a Trojan horse for this for Republican support? We are in the weeds now. Okay, let's get into it.
We are deep in the weeds now. I appreciate these questions. So yes, there is also a reauthorization of surface transportation programs that was due last September. They punted it for a year. It is now due this September. That is actually seen as being separate from the infrastructure plan that Joe Biden put out. He is not envisioning this as being part of that. He says we should pass this surface bill, surface transportation bill first, and then pass this later. There's a political reason for doing that. Part of that political reason is that you budget reconciliation, if that's what we use to pass the infrastructure bill, which is the American Jobs Plan, the big $2 trillion thing we're talking about. If they use reconciliation for that, they can't change policy. They can't create new programs. Reconciliation is a way to get something through the Senate with just 51 votes, not 60, but it's much more limited in terms of what you can do. So you do the surface bill first, you make your new programs, you change all your policies, and then you just sort of bump up the funding levels in reconciliation. So that's one reason that that would go first. Also, the surface transportation bill is a must-pass bill. I mean, that something has to happen by September 30th, or state DOTs are going to go broke and there's going to be no money for, you know, basic transportation. So something is going to have to happen by then. And it's not necessarily going to be this $2 trillion thing that we're going to be fighting over for quite a while. And then earmarks. It's unclear whether there are going to be earmarks in the infrastructure package, but I think that they're that it's likely and that that's expected. There's not really we don't yet know how it's going to move through Congress. It's not yet a bill, right? It's a White House proposal. So we don't exactly know how it's going to move, but Democrats have been saying that they want to bring earmarks back, and this is exactly the kind of bill that they want earmarks for. Is it a way to get Republicans on board? I mean, that is a big reason that they're doing it, but Republicans don't necessarily love earmarks as policy either. So it could create more fights as well.
And can you actually explain how earmarks work and how it would work in this bill if they do come into it?
So earmarks are a way that the way that supporters of earmarks talk about it is that earmarks are a way for lawmakers themselves to direct money to specific projects instead of just, for example, sending all that money to the Department of Transportation saying you figure it out, and then unaccountable, unelected bureaucrats, in their words, make those decisions. They say, who knows better than the people who represent this district to say, I know what needs to happen here and I know what projects are necessary. So we do expect that that will be coming into play for both the surface transportation bill and this infrastructure bill. And it could end up being, they've changed the way that they do earmarks from 2011 when they were banned. And they've brought in a lot of new kind of accountability mechanisms, ways of making sure that they don't have sort of a bridge to nowhere kind of situation, that they don't have another situation where they're finding, where people feel that there was just sort of pork being thrown around to basically buy votes.
Right, because the earmarks would be like a member of Congress saying, like, I want money to go to this specific community center or this specific bridge to be built. And then the Bridge to Nowhere became the example of why they were the worst. But then I think the reaction started to be that, well, that people couldn't, like members of Congress couldn't get money diverted to their specific districts for projects they knew they really wanted. So that was kind of like the swinging back and forth. It does feel like infrastructure is the place they would want it, to be honest. Like if they're going to put it in any bill, it feels like this is where they'd want it. Like they know what roads are bad.
Right, absolutely. There are also different ways that earmarks have gone. And if we're going into the weeds, let's go there.
Let's just go.
So, you know, there are appropriations earmarks and authorization earmarks. There are, you know, you can say that different members of Congress get a certain amount and that it's sort of like a slush fund that they get to spend. You can say, instead of giving this to DOT and they will, you know, pick the best projects, we'll do that in Congress and we will get all of the members of Congress to submit the projects that they would like to see and we will pick the best ones. Or we'll say, we really need Joe Manchin's vote. We're going to make sure that he gets a certain amount of money. We really want to bring, you know, at least a few Republicans, or we need a few Republicans. The chair is going to get more. The ranking member is going to get more. So there are different ways that that has worked in the past. And I have asked those questions and have not gotten a firm answer. I think that they haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah, once we start to see like gorgeously paved roads in West Virginia, we'll know that everyone's looking to bring Joe Manchin's vote on board.
Well, and the other senator from West Virginia is the top Republican on the main committee in the Senate that is in charge of this bill as well. So we have many reasons to give great largesse to the state of West Virginia.
You know what? They're looking for a little good news in West Virginia. Well, Rhodes feels like a great place to start.
Sure.
So, Tanya, you said at the beginning that you said this is going to go on for a while. What kind of timeline do you think we're looking at where, I mean, regular people like can weigh in with their member of Congress of what they want to see in this bill, and then we'd actually start to get rubber to the road, so to speak?
Honestly, I'm pretty unclear on that. I mean, I think that if we're talking about the surface transportation bill coming first and that has a September 30th deadline, you know, and those are going to, Congress is going, we're going to see some text and Congress is going to start voting, at least in committee, on text by the end of May. And that's going to come first. I don't know how far behind this is going to be or if it's going to end up getting all rolled into one. There's not a timeline for this. The surface transportation bill has some deadlines. The American Jobs Plan had some deadlines, or American Rescue Plan had some deadlines that they were trying to address. This doesn't. So I think it's pretty unclear. They also are trying to roll out the second part of their kind of big Build Back Better stimulus plan, which is more focused on caregiving. That was supposed to happen, I think, 2 weeks after the jobs plan. So that would have been now-ish. I don't know. I mean, I think that we're kind of in the middle of a firestorm right now about this first part. I don't know that they want to kind of introduce the second part yet. So I think that they are turning to it aggressively in terms of messaging. But I don't know when we're going to be seeing real movement through Congress.
So interesting. Tanya, thank you so much for joining this conversation about infrastructure that you know I love to have. I know you love to have. We will come back to have it again. I'm Emily Tisch-Sussman, host of your Political Playlist podcast. This is Tanya Snyder of Politico. Thank you so much for joining us. We're definitely going to come back to you again as this unfolds.
It's very sexy.
Super sexy infrastructure. Thanks, Tanya.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Your Political Playlist. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Your Political Playlist, where you can see video of my interview with Tanya and join us live to ask questions during future ones. For more from Tanya, you can follow her on Twitter at TSnyderDC. Join us every week for smart but bite-sized conversations with women at the seat of power and activism. Subscribe, and if you like us, leave us a rating and comment to let others know. Talk to you next time.